Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Shake your head and conspire, John Iarola. Wait a minute, where's John Iarola? Today's Wednesday. We're supposed to roll with Iarola. Okay, I'm gonna explain that. It's kind of a slightly weird day. Okay, I'm here, but I'm not here. John and Anna are gonna do the show, but yet here I am. Weird, or as my kids would say, window. So it is in fact Earth Day. Hence, the Earth Day specialist, Iarola, is going to come in here in a couple of minutes. And hence my shirt. Brett, show my shirt, brother. Okay, look at this. Green New Deal. TYT's in there, okay? That's a shirt. That's green. That's Earth. That's shoptyt.com. God, I don't understand anyone who doesn't immediately buy that shirt. I just don't get it.
It's a pretty cool design. By the way, on Monday, there was, as I was walking after the show, around the neighborhood, this little girl was like, "Happy Earth Day," as I was like walking by. And I was like, "Earth Day? Today's not Earth Day." And then I remembered that it was 420 and her parents were probably talking about how it was 420 and she overheard and asked questions. And they're like, "Yeah, today's Earth Day. That's the ticket."
So. But, you know, along those lines, that's right. First of all, Ben on Old School got confused, too. He thought 420 was Earth Day, too. So it could be just normal confusion. But what we're absolutely sure of, it's Green Week. All right. Definitely. Monday was 420. Go green there. Wednesday's Earth Day. Go green there. Aspiration.com/TYT. Plant 10 trees. Go green there. I'm not saying anything. I just said it, though. All right. And anyway, you guys got a lot of stories, but I came on for one other reason. Oh, I'm supposed to tell you, by the way, 20% off at shoptyt.com. So you can get this shirt, you can get our weed shirt, you can get whatever shirt you want. Go nuts. It's store-wide, 20% off site-wide. What are these thugs doing? Oh, but you got to use the code EARTHDAY, EARTHDAY, okay? So shoptyt.com, EARTHDAY. You got it. So go nuts. It is, in fact, panic time. Okay, so... now the second reason why I'm on. So yesterday we asked you guys to get us to a hard goal in our audience funding. We were trying to get to $143,053 because at that point, Joe from LA, who's an awesome guy, who I'm going to big reveal coming today. Who's Joe from LA? I know you're excited. He's going to kick in an extra $50,000, which is a lot of money, dude. But he knows the Young Turks needed, the progressives needed, and we need that voice out there right now. We need that beacon out there. That's why he's doing it, because he cares about the movement. And so yesterday we were quite a distance from 143. Did we get there? Let's take a look. Oh, we're on air. We're on air. Okay. So we got 10,000 past it. So at tyt.com/go. Now, when we get past it, we said we're going to add the extra 50,000 from Joe in LA. Brett, go ahead and add it. All right. So So we're trying to get to 200,000 every month. But what we're doing is we're carrying over the extra for the next month. So we actually started this month with over 50,000 because that was carried over from March, pre-coronavirus. Let's keep it going. Let's keep it going. Let's roll it into May. So please, this is so important. It's to keep us sustainable. It's to keep us healthy. It's to keep that light in the darkness glowing and making sure that we're fighting for progressives and getting that message out there. And then finally, so who is Joe from LA? I've been kind of kidding around about it, teasing you guys about who it is. And I said, some of you might figure it out. And some of you did figure it out. You were right. It's Joe Sandberg. He is a wonderful progressive. He is champion of the earned income tax credit. That helps the working poor. He has helped literally millions of people with the legislation he helped to get passed and then marketed here in California. And then he took that campaign nationwide. He's also one of the original investors in Blue Apron, which now a lot of you are using in this situation. But he's also the co-founder of Aspiration.com. So an Aspiration, as you know, is a wonderful progressive financial institution. We talk about it on the show all the time. It's not the point of this, but it gives you a sense of, look, you know, you can have wealthy folks in the country. Oh, by the way, Joe grew up very poor. So that's part of why he is a great guy and is a progressive and went through all that and knows it and still feels that. I talk about that with me all the time. When I was poor, man, it was an incredible struggle when I was poor. Anyway, so, and we all have, if you're good people, you have a little bit of PTSD from being poor and you want to make sure you help others. And Joe does a fantastic job of that. So we really appreciate him chipping in. If other progressives want to do that, bless your hearts, that would be amazing. TYT.com/go. So anyway, love you guys. Let's please keep it going because it keeps the lights on and it's so important in these tough times. And obviously, if you can't give, please don't. Make sure you take care of yourself, your family, and loved ones first. But if you can, let's keep the progressive voice strong. Thank you, guys, and thank you to Joe Sandberg.
Definitely. I want to double down on my gratitude. Not only for helping to keep us afloat, but, you know, what that translates to is freedom, editorial freedom, the ability to speak our minds without worrying about any type of retaliation from advertisers or anything. So thank you so much. Joe's incredible for helping out the way that he has. But that doesn't take away from all of the incredible audience members who have also chipped in, hearing right. What you guys have sacrificed just to help us out. It means a lot. And, you know, number one should be taking care of you. But the fact that you guys have chipped in to keep us afloat means the world to us. So thank you.
Yeah. And that's the great thing about Joe. There's never any strings attached. He's like, you guys do what you do. I love it. You get the progressive message out there. Everybody wins. But I want to double down on what Anna said too, guys. It was a matching grant. If you guys didn't put in, then we couldn't have gotten the 50,000 and it wouldn't have been matched. So, I love that what you guys did. And whether it was $1,000, which some folks did, and I love you for it, but or whether it was $3. Look, if sometimes $3 is more than other people can afford $1,000. So thank you so much. Thank you for believing in us. And thank you for helping us to get that progressive message out.
All right. Thank you, Cenk. When we come back from the break, we're going to have John Iadarola join in. And we have some breaking news about a shakeup in the Trump administration. What's up, everyone? Welcome back to TYT. Anna Kasparian and John Iadarola with you. John, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm just the best. How are you, Anna?
I'm doing okay. I'm surviving. We're all surviving. Yeah.
Yeah. We are.
You are our resident climate change expert, and it's Earth Day. You've done some pretty great interviews for your Earth Day special. Do you want to talk about that real quick before we move on to the stories?
Sure. I mean, I will say first, I'm a terrible self-promoter, so I'll say I had the luck of speaking with climate change experts. I'll put it that way. But yeah, I got to talk to Bill McKibben and some of the leaders of some of the best youth climate change organizations, founder of Sunrise Movement, founder of Zero Hour. And we talked about not only sort of the state of things, but much more importantly, going forward, what can we do in general, but especially when it comes to the climate, when it comes to the environment, what can we as individuals do? What can we expect that some of the most influential and most passionate and aggressive climate change organizations are going to be doing? And so I think it was a very It was a very helpful for me personally to stay inspired. I think if this is an issue that you care about, it will be inspiring to you too. If it's not an issue that you care about, what the hell's wrong with you?
So everyone, make sure you check out John's Earth Day special. That will air immediately after this hour of the show. So it'll be at 4 p.m. Pacific time, 7 p.m. Eastern time. All right, well, let's move on to some breaking news. So Dr. Rick Bright, who was the director of the federal agency leading the charge to find a vaccine for coronavirus, had been removed from his position by the Trump administration and essentially demoted to what he has referred to as a less impactful role. And in an open letter to the public, he has made clear that he believes that this has been retaliation due to the fact that he has been resistant toward using congressionally appropriated funds on acquiring drugs that he feels are not scientifically proven to treat coronavirus, drugs like chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine. In his letter, and I'm going to read you a few excerpts, he wrote, "Unfortunately, this resulted in clashes with HHS political leadership, including criticism for my protective efforts to invest early in vaccines and supplies critical to saving American lives. I also resisted efforts to fund potentially dangerous drugs promoted by those with political connections." Mm. So he specifically called out the hydroxychloroquine promotions during these press conferences. He says specifically, and contrary to misguided directives, I limited the broad use of chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine promoted by the administration as a panacea, but which clearly lack the scientific merit. While I'm prepared to look at all options and think outside of the box for effective treatments, I rightly resisted efforts to provide an unproven drug on demand to the American public. I insisted that these drugs be provided only to hospitalized patients with confirmed COVID-19 while under the supervision of a physician. These drugs have potentially serious risks associated with them, including increased mortality observed in some recent studies in patients with COVID-19. And he's absolutely right. Sweden has completely stopped using hydroxychloroquine for COVID-19 patients. In Brazil, they had to stop a study that used the drug on coronavirus patients because many of them developed severe heart conditions. Some of them also died as a result of the side effects connected to the drug.
Yeah, look, in a rational world, the fact that he was pushed out after apparently, at least from this account, doing the right thing would provide a little bit of solace. It would help to boost his reputation. In reality, it'll likely just result in the Republicans attacking him more viciously. Because not only was he cast out by the Trump administration, which means that like chum thrown in the ocean, a right winger has to attack that target to prove their loyalty. But also he was right about something scientific, and so he has to be destroyed. There were two sorts of people like this whole time for the past month, both in terms of media and in terms of doctors. There were the people who were urging caution, while usually tinged with hope that this would be the miracle drug that people were saying, but we understood the side effects that we could read. I don't need to be a doctor to know that, you know, causing fatal heart arrhythmia is a bad thing. And there were the people, both media and doctors, fake doctors, Dr. Oz, Dr. Phil, stuff like that, who were pushing it and pretending that it was this Lazarus-like cure, 100% and all of that. And so it turns out that the people who were urging caution were wise to do so, the doctors and the media. And we're going to get an apology from the other people? Acknowledgement that we were right? No, we're not going to get anything like that. In fact, you're probably going to lose your job. If they're in a position of power over you and you were right about this, it is more inconvenient to them that you were right than that the drug doesn't work.
One other thing that he mentioned quite a bit in his letter was cronyism. And so there's, you know, he's implying that there are financial interests in promoting this drug that is not scientifically proven to actually help with coronavirus. In fact, the studies that we've seen so far provide limited data for some possibility that it could help under some circumstances. But in most cases, people do suffer from serious heart conditions, serious side effects. And look, the other side of this is, you know, or the other negative impact of what the Trump administration is doing is that hydroxychloroquine is a drug that lupus patients rely on in order to stay alive. Lupus patients in the United States have had a hard time filling their prescriptions because of what Donald Trump has irresponsibly said about the drug during his press conferences. And it's also used as a malaria drug. And anytime anyone has the audacity to question Donald Trump or other members of the administration, anytime their power or their financial interests are threatened by the truth, they just get rid of the person who's sharing the truth. And in most cases, people who speak out against the administration do so under, you know, anonymity, or they'll speak off the record with reporters. In this case, Dr. Rick Bright is like, you are not going to silence me. I'm going to come out. I'm going to tell the country what's actually going on and what happened to me. In one part of his letter, he said, sidelining me in the middle of this pandemic and placing politics and cronyism ahead of science put lives at risk and stunts national efforts to safely and effectively address this urgent public health crisis. And he's absolutely right. He's like, I'm not going to shut up because lives are on the line here. And yeah, I'm sure he's well aware of how the Trump administration is going to treat him moving forward.
In super fast, I just have one other thing to say. Like, they wanted to present themselves, look, I've got this thing that's going to be amazing. And they're telling you not that it's not going to be amazing, but I'm telling you it's amazing. So you should think of me as the person who is doing something right now. And whether or not they're financially benefiting from pushing that, it appears that some in the Trump administration are. It was certainly a good distraction, but it was also pointless from my point of view, because there was an alternative that he could have been pushing. It's not a miracle drug. It doesn't cure 100% of people, but he could have been funding masks and gloves, those sorts of things, hospital gowns, tests. He could have been doing a tour around the country, delivering, hand-delivering photo ops galore, delivering PPE to nurses around the country. He could be reassuring people every day that he's going to be providing what hospitals need. It would have both helped and would have helped him pragmatically in terms of appearing to actually care about this thing. But he decided to go in the other direction and didn't do either of those.
That's exactly right. Because at the end of the day, it's not really about helping people and ensuring that he saves as many lives as possible and protects as many healthcare workers as possible. It's, yes, he cares about his reelection, but more importantly, what does he care even more about than getting reelected? His money, right? So, if there are financial ties, which I wouldn't be surprised if there were, considering all of the conflicts of interest we've seen from Donald Trump already, one of which we'll talk about later in the show today, if he can make a quick buck off of a tragedy like this, he will. If his friends can make a quick buck off of a tragedy like this, they will. And that's really like at the heart of every decision this guy makes.
But I don't understand, like, he couldn't come up with some way to make money off of the traditional solutions? Like, I'm confident that a con man, a grifter of his talent and experience could have come up with some way to have benefited. And like, we're really, I know we're going over, I apologize. We're having this conversation about which way is the pandemic going to go in terms of his reelection? Are people going to rally around him and the flag because it's a disaster? Or are they going to see that lots of people are dying and turn away from him? But he could have guaranteed it would go in his direction if he did the very easy things that he's been told to do by doctors. And he wouldn't even be spending his own money. He'd be spending our money to provide these supplies. Like, do you have any doubt that if he had aggressively protected America from this pandemic, that he wouldn't be reelected?
Oh, I have no doubt. I think that he certainly would get reelected. But he's not a sophisticated guy. Right.
That's
so,
true.
Yes, he's a grifter, but he's not the typical sophisticated political grifter that we're used to. And he wears his cruelty on his sleeve. Like, he doesn't care about being painted as a cruel person or being perceived as a cruel person. That is who he is. And he's proud of that. And for a lot of his supporters, it's not the bug, it's the feature, which is why every time, you know, a story comes up about him being vicious to a journalist during his press conferences, I think that legacy media outlets get it wrong. Covering that only helps him with his base. They love it. And he's going to keep acting this way because he's gotten away with it throughout his entire term. So it's pretty devastating, and it's scary to see him get rid of more of the adults who are doing the right thing, who are trying to help us in the middle of this pandemic. But we'll follow the story and give you guys updates as it develops. In other news today, though, I wanted to kind of fill you in on more information we know about the protests that are springing up throughout the country. politicians and advisors close to the Trump administration, Donald Trump himself, are helping to organize and mobilize some of these anti-social distancing protests we're seeing throughout the country. Most of them are taking place in some of these swing states, or specifically in states that have Democratic governors. And it turns out that one of the individuals on Donald Trump's coronavirus task force is like fanning the flames, and he's helping to organize it. So the person I'm talking about is Stephen Moore. And let me give you some of the details that the New York Times uncovered. Support for the protests features more direct ties to the White House. The administration recently formed an advisory group for reopening the economy that included Stephen Moore. Moore had been coordinating with FreedomWorks, the Tea Party Patriots, and the American Legislative Exchange Council in a coalition called Save Our Country, which is ironically named, which has formed to push for a quicker easing of restrictions. So here you have this guy who's serving on Trump's economic task force. And why do you think he's serving on that task force to begin with, right? Like, this is a guy who doesn't actually care about Americans or their lives. He does care about getting them back to work, even though he knows that it's likely that it's too soon to get people back to work. They'll risk their lives, we'll reopen the economy, and he'll, you know, he'll earn his short-term profits. But we all know how this story ends. We all know that the virus is likely to continue spreading. It'll spread rapidly once some of these states reopen their local economy. And so it's devastating to see this guy behind the scenes, you know, obviously not interested in actual evidence or scientific data. He's just interested in getting people out there. So he's helping to organize these groups. And he even bragged about it during a recent interview with conservative radio host Hugh Hewitt. Let's hear what he had to say.
A group in Wisconsin that wants to do a drive-in. So, you know, you remember the old sit-ins, but this is going to be a drive-in. They're going to shut down the Capitol. Shh, don't tell anybody. But they think they can get 1,500 people to come in. And this is great. You guys will. So we have one big donor in Wisconsin. I'm not going to mention his name. And I told him about this. He said, Steve, I promise I will pay the bail and legal fees for anyone who gets arrested. So this is a great time, gentlemen and ladies, for civil disobedience. We need to be the Rosa Parks here.
God, this man is absolute trash. And by the way, he feels so strongly about these protests. Is he going to show up? Is he going to protest? Is he going to put his life on the line? Well, Moore said he would probably turn down an invitation to speak at the protest in Wisconsin because, quote, it's important that no one be under the impression that it's sponsored or directed by national groups in Washington. Except it's being mobilized, organized by you, and you are working for the White House right now in this coronavirus task force. Disgusting.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Yeah, well, I believe he is being honest when he says it's important that there's not that perception, but it is being organized by that. I mean, look, he's a great individual. I'm glad that you're pointing that out. There are others too. I mean, DeVos, obviously, in terms of one of the state efforts, and any number of other groups that have helped to, you know, provide these grassroots protests around climate denial or back in the day with the Tea Party. It's all the same. It's probably mostly the same people, too. And it's honestly, it's mostly the same issues. I mean, ostensibly, they're out there because they care about the state reopening. But lots of them just, they're out there to tote their guns around and to talk about how the Second Amendment is so important. Like, it's the same signs, basically, that they're coming out for. I love that the terminology he used there. That he was like, you know, he thought, I'm going to make a comparison to Rosa Parks. Wait, is that a good idea? It is a good idea. I'm going to do that. What if we were to ask him, tons of people gathering dangerously close, dressed like terrorists to the best extent that they can, toting assault rifles. That is the best of American participatory democracy. Civil disobedience, Kaepernick kneeling, right out. Not acceptable.
That, I know, it is.
That
it
is offensive, Anna. It's offensive for him to kneel. He should have kneeled with a disease and spread it to the people around him. That would have been American patriotism.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, like, the hypocrisy, we've always known that hypocrisy exists, not just with Republicans, politicians in general. We see it all the time. But coronavirus has, like, really amplified it because, like, the same people who are breaking their local laws in going out there and protesting, refusing to practice social distancing, are typically the same conservatives who made, you know, like, apologist arguments when Donald Trump's ridiculous, horrific, cruel policies at the border led to children dying in cages. And the argument was, well, they didn't follow the law. They didn't follow the law. So those kids, they deserve to die. Okay, So you're not following the law in your state. So if the state decides to take, you know, real retaliatory action against you, do you deserve it? I mean, it's just, I'm obviously using a euphemism here, but like, I wouldn't want those people to be gunned down or killed because they're breaking a law, right? Like, it's just, they don't think that they have to abide by the same standards that they demand of other people. People who have absolutely no power whatsoever. And it's gross. And this is, yes, of course, about reopening local economies, getting everyone back out there and working. But it's also about helping Donald Trump with his reelection campaign. Because as the New York Times reported, these groups are sharing the data with advisors on the president's economic task force and other conservative allies on Capitol Hill. And they're collecting email addresses. They're collecting all sorts of data on the protesters who are taking part in this. And they're sharing it with the Trump campaign.
Yeah.
This is how Republicans operate.
Yeah. And if I was one of those people, like, at some point, you got to realize, like, they are, I mean, yes, people get used by politicians all the time. But, like, they're going to use you up, almost literally. Like, they're willing to see you die for their own economic and political benefit. Hypothetical benefit, they're not even sure. It's a risk. It's probably not going to help the economy anyway. But you know what? It's worth a chance because it doesn't take anything from me. No sacrifice. The risk is all on you. I'm going to watch the stock market. If it goes up, good. I can recoup some of my money. If not, I'll just wait, which was what I was going to do anyway. I'm certainly not going to leave my house. You know, I might be politically savvy enough to not pose in front of my massive ice cream freezer, but I've got one. It's well stocked and I can wait while you guys get ground up by this disease. I can wait. That's him, just to be clear. I don't have one of those.
Yeah, exactly. No, of course. All right. Well, let's talk about how this all manifests in states like Georgia. So Georgia's governor, Brian Kemp, is currently in the process of opening his state up and loosening social distancing guidelines. And this is going to be a complete and utter disaster, especially since recent data indicates that the number of coronavirus deaths has gone up. The number of people who have contracted the virus in the state of Georgia has gone up. And doesn't seem to really hinder any of the efforts that Kemp has in reopening the state. So just to give you some background on what he's doing, he plans on reopening, and it makes no sense to me, things like movie theaters, gyms, hair salons, you know, the types of places where you can't help but be in close contact with people. And so just to give you the numbers, since April 1st, Georgia averages 764 new cases and 35 deaths per day. The state reported, though, 909 new cases and 85 new deaths on Monday when Kemp announced plans to ease these restrictions. And just to be a little more detailed and specific, establishments including gyms, bowling alleys, body art studios, hair designers, and nail care artists could reopen for minimum basic operations. From next Monday, movie theaters can start selling tickets, and restaurants will no longer be limited to takeout options, although they must still adhere to social distancing guidelines. So go ahead, John. I want to hear what you have to say about this.
How are almost any of those supposed to adhere to social distancing guidelines? Okay, so let's go nail care artists. Going to be difficult to do someone's nails from 6 feet away. I've tried. I haven't figured out a way to do it yet. Theaters, okay, you have to be 6 feet away. That means you could fit 10 people in a theater, maybe. I don't know. Restaurant, couple, two tops? I don't know, because they'd be too close. It would have to be a very long table. It would have to be like royalty, basically, across the room from me. It's so stupid. I am really
don't
hoping.
Don't worry, John. We have the longest tables. Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
People didn't even understand how long. The best case scenario here, is Brian Kemp opens up the state and nobody goes. Just like when one of these right-wing talkers does a show at a university campus. Best case scenario is there's no protest because nobody's there. Have them open up a theater and have it not have a single person in it. Honestly, many of these movie theaters probably aren't going to want to open up, because do you want to be the movie theater that we find out a couple weeks later is traced back to a bunch of people dying from coronavirus? Do you want that to be the memory that people have of your movie theater or of your body art studio? You got essential sleeves you got to do, maybe even if it kills someone. Does anyone think that?
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that, John, because one of the things the Trump administration wants to do is offer protections for businesses that might face lawsuits by individuals who contract the virus, including their workers, by the way, who contract the virus and suffer the consequences of that. That's the way Republicans think. It's about going out of their way to ensure that the economic system that they've benefited from so handsomely is intact, it's protected. But the very people who make those businesses run in the first place, the workers, get no protections and have no legal recourse if they find themselves in a disastrous, you know, situation by contracting the virus. It's just, this is the way that they think. And it's going to end so poorly, because what they keep citing, what Republicans keep citing is, oh, well, if you look at the reports, the actual number of deaths ended up being much less than what we previously expected, which means that we're fine. Everyone's over-exaggerating. We need to get back to work. Yeah, but like, why are you pretending like we haven't been social distancing for over a month now? Is it over a month? Almost a month now, in most cases.
I think it might be over. It's going to be absolutely, hopefully nobody actually goes out there. But if not, then, you know, start the timer right now. We're going to see in 15 to 19 days how many people are getting it per day, assuming that they're even doing the testing, because the sort of guy that would open up the state way premature is also the sort of guy that would be hindering every effort whatsoever to get testing to the level it needs to be. And so people will get it in a couple of weeks. People are going to have coronavirus, lots of them. We might or might not actually know about it.
Yeah. And look, luckily, the majority of Americans, including Republicans, about 70% of Republicans, according to polling, do worry about loosening these restrictions too early. I spoke to family in Florida and urged them to ignore their own governor. And luckily, they were on the same page. So people see what's happening. Some of the important information is getting through, even to conservative voters. And I just want to be clear that what we're seeing with these protests throughout the country is not representative of public opinion. What these conservative groups are trying to do is sway public opinion in the direction of opening the economy back up. But most people are skeptical of that, luckily. All right, well, I want to reset for the second half of this story, because Brian Kemp luckily did face some tough questions from Martha McCollum. And I didn't expect that. I gotta keep it honest. We've seen so much propaganda on Fox News that I usually expect them to do softball interviews with people like Kemp, but that was not the case here. So Georgia Governor Brian Kemp is reopening his state, even though the number of COVID-19 infections and deaths has increased considerably in Georgia. And so he wanted to defend his decision to reopen restaurants, nail salons, hair salons, tattoo parlors. And he tried to do so on Fox News, but he was met with some tough questions. Let's take a look.
Announced this on Monday so we can have time to educate the public and the business owners that this is just not handing them the keys back to go back to where we were. This is a measured approach with a lot of different requirements and guidance that we're going to be putting out.
Can you tell me what you mean by that? So, for instance, is it in Atlanta, if someone wants to get their nails done or their hair done on Friday and or a tattoo or go to a gym, I mean, these are very close contact kinds of businesses that are the first ones on your list. Can you explain why you would start with those kinds of businesses on day one?
Well, those are the ones who are closed. The other businesses in Georgia are still currently opening under the order that I have now, and we're coming down. I think that's what a lot of people don't understand. But you also have to give that fitness owner or that owner in a hair salon the ability to be able to be a partner in this fight that we're in. You know, they're going to have to follow the strict guidelines. I would tell you that I imagine there'll be people in gyms that'll be a lot safer than they would be going to the grocery store or some of the other places of business that are part of the critical infrastructure that's been designated at the federal level. You know, this is going to take some common sense.
John, this is going to take some common sense. The kind of common sense where he didn't realize that asymptomatic individuals could spread the virus. That kind of common sense he was unaware of, even though we knew about that since January. And the kind of common sense that would tell you that nail salons and, you know, hair salons can practice social distancing somehow.
Yeah, I was amazed a few weeks back when we found out that he just found out that asymptomatic individuals could spread the disease. I think a follow-up question would be, does he still know? I'm not sure. I think that he's forgotten since the beginning of the month. And he made an argument there that people would be safer working out at the gym than they would at a grocery store. Which sort of reminds me of the arguments where people are like, well, you know, less people have died of this disease than die of the flu. I don't think these people get that it's not like the worst thing is the only thing. Like, yeah, you'd be safer at the gym than at the supermarket, but you still have to go to the supermarket. You can't eat your weights. So now you're going to go to both of those things. Okay, mm-hmm. The coronavirus deaths don't suddenly mean that we don't have regular flu deaths. We have both of them. And so the person who gets their nails done and then gets a cool calf tattoo also has to buy groceries, only now they might not just be leaving the grocery store or something, they might be bringing something that they got in a tattoo parlor that they didn't need to be at.
When you said I know, it's amazing. And by the way, just to emphasize that point you made about the regular flu, the flu as we've known it, in addition to coronavirus, this is something that the CDC director is very concerned about because, believe it or not, we got lucky in that the number of flu cases was already declining when the number of coronavirus cases.
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's ExpressVPN.com/TYT. Check it out today.
began to increase, right? So what happens in our healthcare system if people are suffering from both simultaneously? And so Robert Redfield, who's the CDC director, said there's a possibility that the assault of the virus on our nation next winter will actually be more difficult than the one we just went through. Redfield said that the United States was spared a much worse COVID-19 outbreak because the coronavirus hit the nation when the seasonal flu was already on the decline. Had they hit at the same time, he was quoted as saying, it could have been really, 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 really difficult in terms of health capacity. And we do have this for-profit healthcare system where hospitals have decided that it's not profitable to have the number of beds we need in case a pandemic hits. And so we weren't prepared in so many different ways. But luckily, I guess, I mean, this is the silver lining. The number of seasonal flu cases was on the decline when coronavirus became an issue.
Yeah. And I don't often hear professionals like this use really, 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 really. But it seems like we should pay attention.
Definitely. All right. Well, we got to take a break. When we come back, we have more news for you, including some drama with the upcoming stimulus coming out of Congress. Mitch McConnell thinks it's okay for states to go bankrupt. That's the kind of goon he is. And we'll give you the details on that and more when we come back. Hey guys, welcome back to TYT. Anna Kasparian and John Iadarola with you. I do have member comments, but I'm going to go ahead and save them for our post-game show today, just because there are two stories I really want to get to. I think it's important, especially this next one. So all of a sudden, Mitch McConnell is pretending to be concerned about the national debt, and he decided to share his concern as soon as Senate Democrats like Chuck Schumer brought up the necessity for an additional stimulus bill that actually helps fund states in their efforts to combat coronavirus and also helps to provide some economic relief to average Americans who clearly have not received the financial help that they've needed through the first stimulus bill. Now, Schumer told Democratic senators in a conference call that there will be a phase four bill. And he also said we will need a big, strong and active COVID four, meaning COVID stimulus package four. It will have to come very soon and needs are large and great. So look, he's right in that. I wish that there was a little more of a fight in the Senate because as we reported yesterday, the Senate did agree on their version of the next stimulus package, which does not have the funding for states that Democrats claim that they're fighting for. And so that's a huge issue. But what's also a huge issue is they're losing the messaging fight because they are coming off, this is my analysis, people might disagree, but in their failure to get the concessions that they needed from Republicans, they have positioned themselves or at least made themselves be perceived as weak. And then at the same time, Republicans are messaging that Democrats were stalling. They were the ones who were holding up the bill at a time that, you know, people are in desperation. Businesses are in desperation. Small businesses need this money. And so you have the Mitch McConnells of the world going out there and making it seem like Democrats are the bad guys, when in reality, Republicans are fighting hard to just keep bailing out failed corporations and companies. Now, we need an additional money and additional funding for the small businesses. But as we know, a lot of that money ended up going to companies that are not actually small businesses. So unfortunately, Democrats are also losing the messaging war right now. And they should be amplifying what I'm about to play for you. This is Mitch McConnell basically telling Hugh Hewitt that these states don't deserve any help because they offer these pensions to their workers, and we don't like that. Take a look.
The state governments are going to be smashed up by this, but there is no Chapter 8 in the bankruptcy code. Who are you going to tell, you know, for states? No states can go bankrupt. Local governments can go bankrupt and reorganize. Who are you going to task to lead the effort on deciding what to do or not to do for the states?
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be a broad discussion without, you know, throughout the conference. I mean, we all represent states. We all have governors, regardless of party, who would love to have free money. And that's why I said yesterday we're going to push the pause button here, because I think this whole business of additional assistance for state and local governments needs to be thoroughly evaluated. You raised yourself the important issue of what states have done, many of them have done to themselves with their pension programs. There's not going to be any desire on the Republican side to bail out state pensions by borrowing money from future generations. So this is a much bigger conversation.
It's incredible, because those pensions, like, people work and contribute to their pensions. Mm-hmm. Like, the way that Mitch McConnell frames this is just so disgusting. And if Republicans could have their way, if people like Mitch McConnell could have their way, regardless of what job you do, even if it involves back-breaking labor, you will work till the day you die. Screw your retirement, screw your pension, who cares? If you have a state that has, you know, a well-thought-for pension for their state employees, well, we're going to go ahead and retaliate by not bailing you out, bailing the state out, helping the state out during this pandemic, even as trillions of dollars are going to these massive corporations in the form of bailouts.
Yeah, it's really amazing in several different ways. One, the propensity of Donald Trump to betray those who have shown the most loyalty and support to him has now trickled down to the rest of the Republican Party. And so, is he screwing over Democratic governors? Yes. Is he also screwing over Republican governors? Yes. And if I was a Republican governor who was looking at the possibility that my state's going to be devastated by the economic ramifications of this, as well as the mounting death toll, which also, if I'm just being a craven politician, is going to hurt my chances of being reelected. Because sure, maybe Donald Trump is immune to the responsibility of presiding over a horrendous situation, but other politicians probably aren't going to have that sort of protection. I would be incredibly frustrated with the Republican Party nationally if I was a Republican governor and I was seeing that. I mean, it should be clipped out all the time. The idea that we should help the states should be very carefully evaluated. The help that they need is pretty clear and not that difficult to come by. I mean, I understand they don't want to hand over a ton of money, even though they 100% should. They don't even want to fund testing kits, as if the worst case scenario that they are trying to avoid is we get to the end of the coronavirus and it's like there's like a pile of testing kits. Oh, that was such a waste. Disaster. We don't have anything to use these testing kits for. That's really what they're acting like. I agree with you that to the extent that the Democrats can completely flub the messaging around this, they've done, for the most part, they've done that. I mean, they've passed a few bills that were never going to get past the Senate. I mean, that's pretty good, but, you know, it's never going to get past the Senate. What is protecting them is that, and it's always the thing that protects horrible Democrats, is that the Republicans are so obviously cruel and disinterested in protecting the lives of their potential voters that that's starting to stick. And the evaluation of the response has been dipping over time. That's only going to get worse as we pass, what, maybe tomorrow we pass 50,000 deaths? I mean, yesterday we had more than two-thirds of a 9/11. The day before that we had about two-thirds of a 9/11. We're pretty much averaging every 2 days we pass a 9/11 in totally unnecessary coronavirus deaths. And if you're in charge, as the Republicans are, in virtually every aspect of American governance, some people are going to reasonably put that on you. And so that might protect some of these Democrats from completely, you know, wasting this opportunity, wasting it both in terms of potentially helping people and also helping themselves to get back into power.
And look, guys, this is the reason why I brought up the Pelosi ice cream video on the show, because it's not about demonizing someone who has wealth. It's about the optics that come through when you're already losing that messaging war when it comes to helping average Americans in this fight. But it just like emphasizes to people that the party isn't really looking out for them, that it's all talk. Because on that same day, 22 million people were reported to have filed for unemployment. Not all on that same day, but it was reported that 22 million people filed for unemployment as a result of coronavirus. And so it's just so tone deaf to put out a video like that. But look, I want to go back to a genuine bad guy, and that's Mitch McConnell, because if you think the first video that we showed you was bad, get a load of this.
I agree. I think people do not understand how badly mismanaged some states have been and their unfunded liabilities. And if they were in the private sector, they would have to reorganize under the bankruptcy code. But there is no bankruptcy code chapter. Do you think that we need to invent one for states so that they can discharge some of these liabilities that were put in place by previous governors? Like, I mean, Jerry Brown ran a giveaway program for public employee unions that was just astonishing. And as did Gray Davis, as did, you know, it's just a lot of Democratic governors. Illinois is probably the worst in Connecticut. They've just given money away for years to people who aren't working.
Yeah, I would certainly be in favor of allowing states to use the bankruptcy route. It saves some cities, and there's no good reason for it not to be available.
It's amazing. So he is advocating for states to go bankrupt. Don't look to us for help, even in the middle of a pandemic. And it's just so devastating, because think about how many of these working Americans pay their taxes. They don't get these freebies in their federal income tax. Mitch McConnell had absolutely no problem with $10 trillion in tax cuts for the wealthy. $2 trillion in tax cuts for the wealthy over the next 10 years. No problems with that, right? Yeah. He has no problems with trillions of dollars in bailouts for massive corporations. But when it comes to helping the little guy, when it comes to ensuring that states stay afloat, nah, they should file for bankruptcy.
Yeah, and from the very beginning of this, before it hit America, there has been a fundamental disagreement between the people who fear worst case scenario is lots of people die, with the people who fear worst case scenario, the stock market really gets hit. And, you know, before they took it seriously, before it was here, they said that we were hyping it up to hurt the stock market. Remember that? We just want to I hate my 401k. I want to destroy it. That's what they said. They didn't want to do the lockdowns because that would hurt businesses. Now they're restarting early to try to help businesses. And the one of the most tragic things, second only to 45,000 Americans dying already, is that the exact tactics that we have been advocating for from before the first American death to coronavirus not only would have saved those lives, but also would have been the best possible strategy to limit the economic damage, to limit how long we need to be in quarantine, to allow us to resume normal life with the protections necessary to make sure that we don't have a double dip in, or double peak, I should say. It was all there the whole time, and they fought us, and as a result, many, many people have lost their lives, and far more are likely to, and the economic damage has been as bad as possible. Now, they've been able to stem a bit of it in terms of how it affects them, but it didn't have to be this way.
It didn't. It didn't have to be this way. And just to be clear, some of the, you know, proposals that Chuck Schumer is demanding are good proposals. He just needs to fight for it. One of the most important things that we need to provide to essential workers is hazard pay. They are putting their lives on the line to go out there and do their jobs. So enough with like the sweet talk about how they're heroes. How about treating them like they're heroes? How about treating them like they're human beings? And so hazard pay is a big part of what Chuck Schumer is fighting for, or should be fighting for. He's proposing it. And of course, there are needs for state funding and additional help for everyday Americans who aren't able to work right now. They want $2,000 a month for the next 6 months, recurring payments, so people are able to pay their bills. That one-time bill was not enough. But anyway, we have more on this in the post game. Become a member at tyt.com/join. Everyone else, definitely check out John's Earth Day special. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.